Ohio helped lead the way in public funding for private school education as the second state in the nation to provide vouchers. And now the program has grown to offer assistance to any family in the state, regardless of their income. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about his recent investigation charting the rise of Ohio's voucher program and its impact on public schools is ProPublica reporter Alec McGillis. Thanks for being here, Alec.
Thanks for having me.
Vouchers started in Ohio as a pilot program. Explain briefly the origins of the program.
Well, in the early 1990s, George Voinovich, a Republican, was elected as the state's new governor. He had been the mayor of Cleveland, and he was very close with the state's Catholic bishops. Voinovich was himself a devout Catholic, and he knew that the bishops were very concerned about the future of the state's urban Catholic schools, which had lost a lot of enrollment to suburban flight, had enrolled quite a few African-American students to sort of fill those empty seats. But a lot of those families were not able to pay as much in tuition. And so those urban Catholic schools were struggling. And Voinovich and the state's bishops, Catholic bishops, came up with a plan, kind of quietly came up with a plan to help these urban Catholic schools by creating a voucher program, a pilot voucher program that would start sending taxpayer money, public money, into these private Catholic schools in the form of vouchers.
And you reviewed a trove of letters to and from former Governor Voinovich with church officials that really illuminates that plan, that relationship that he had with all those church leaders. What were the concerns about separation of church and state during this whole thing?
Well, the Governor Voinovich and the bishops were very aware that their plan to send public money into these private religious schools might cause concerns about violating both the First Amendment, the federal national First Amendment, and state constitutions language on separation of church and state. And so they were very careful to do everything as behind the scenes as possible. That's what comes through in this extraordinary correspondence. This constant back and forth is their attempt to keep the church's role in pushing for this pilot program as quiet as possible. The church, for instance, suggested a whole bunch of people to be serving on the governor's school choice commission that came up with a pilot program, but it was of course not made clear that these people had been selected by the church. And so and likewise, when it came time to lobby for the legislation, there was language in these letters about how they had to make sure to keep the church's role in that lobbying push as quiet as possible. So that was very much a concern that people would oppose this plan because they would see it as very clearly violating church-state divides.
Ultimately, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the Ohio program was constitutional. What did that open the door for?
Yes, there was a really key ruling in 2002, a 5-4 ruling with Sandra Day O'Connor in the majority, that basically said we're going to allow this pilot program in Cleveland that at the time was serving just a couple thousand children, because it's so narrow, because it's so targeted, it's just a couple thousand kids in this one city, so we're going to let that stand. And but that one ruling then did allow for it, opened the door to a much broader expansion. So in the years that followed that ruling, Ohio gradually, very steadily expanded the voucher program first to other struggling school districts in other cities such as Cincinnati and Columbus. Some students in those cities were, starting in 2006, were able to get vouchers. And then finally in 2012-13, it was expanded to be available to students in any district in the state up to a certain income level. And then finally, just a couple years ago, of course, it achieved total universality. So now any student in any district, regardless of their income level, can get thousands of dollars toward their private school tuition. So that ruling really, while it was intended to be for only for this narrow voucher pilot in Cleveland, it did then allow for this much broader expansion.
We're talking about the rise of private school vouchers in Ohio. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Now, with Ohio's universal voucher program, how much are vouchers costing state taxpayers at this point?
The price tag's now up around $1 billion. It's really quite extraordinary, but really should not be so surprising. The fact is that all these families around the state who already have their kids enrolled in private schools, mostly religious schools, because most private schools in Ohio are Catholic or Christian, are now being presented with an amazing offer, which is that all they have to do is sign up for the vouchers, and they're now going to be getting anywhere up to $8,000 per child based on their income. And so virtually all families in private schools have taken that offer, taken that voucher. In some cases, there were some parents who were reluctant to do so, because they, you know, felt like they shouldn't be taking the state's money for their decision to send their kid to private school. But there was actually pressure from many private school administrators, basically coaxing or even almost requiring their families to accept the money. So what's happened now is that the vast share of these newly available vouchers are going to families who already had their kids in private schools. The vouchers, of course, have been sold over for many years as a way for kids to escape struggling schools, to have that choice to escape struggling schools and get into a private school. But right now, what we're seeing is that the vast share of these new vouchers are going to families who already had their kids in private school.
And I should note that we have talked on this program before about how there are some private schools in our area, at least, who don't accept the vouchers, but certainly many, many that do. That $1 billion that you just referenced, how does that compare to what the state spends on public school funding?
It is roughly 1/12. The total state's total K-12 budget is up around $12-13 billion. And what you're seeing now is that sort of inevitably the fact that the state is now spending so much money on the vouchers, about $1 billion a year, is making it harder for it to fulfill its goals for public school funding. Speaker Huffman recently, came over to the House from having been the Senate president, really the key proponent of vouchers in the Ohio state government this last decade or so. He just said very bluntly a few weeks ago that, look, there's not enough money to go around now. We're not going to be able to increase public school funding as had been the plan to fulfill the state's obligation, constitutional obligations for adequate public school funding. There's just not enough money to go around now. So we're going to have to cut back on that. Well, one major reason why there's not enough money to go around, quite bluntly, is that the state is spending almost $1 billion now on the vouchers. It's not very complicated.
Well, and you had mentioned that the original philosophy behind this program was, hey, there are kids who are, quote unquote, trapped in these low performing public schools. They should have the opportunity to go to private schools for, what supporters said would be a better education. What data, what research has there been about how students using vouchers in public schools, how their performance compares to students in public schools? Are there apples to apples comparisons out there?
It's really been quite mixed, the data. Some data shows that that the students who stayed in public schools actually have met or exceeded the performance of their sort of similar peers who left for private schools. In other cases, the kids who left did seem to do somewhat better. It's what makes this really hard is finding the apple to apple comparison. One reason it's hard is that there's simply less data and transparency when it comes to private schools. Just by definition, they have fewer requirements for testing and accountability. And which is, of course, is one of the concerns now about so much money in Ohio and the other dozen states that now have universal school vouchers, that you just don't know as much about how kids are faring there. So it does make those comparisons trickier.
You had mentioned that, you know, we talked about this case that went all the way to the Ohio Supreme Court for the original voucher pilot program. Explain the current legal challenge that's happening for this current voucher program.
So a couple years ago, even before the state passed these fully universal vouchers, just about a year before that, when the vouchers had already expanded quite a lot, a coalition of now more than 200 school districts in Ohio, together with the teachers unions and some other organizations, filed suit against the expansion. And so on all sorts of different grounds, including once again, arguing that this expansion violates the state constitution's language on the separation of church and state. And so that is expected to come to trial sometime this year. And so that is now the big challenge that is looming out there to this expansion.
Well, you mentioned that part of the ruling, that original Supreme Court ruling, was that the Ohio pilot program was so narrow. Now, clearly, it's not narrow. Is that going to be a cornerstone of the argument, you think?
Absolutely. The context has just simply changed right now. So in that sense, these people, the plaintiffs have a stronger case to make in that regard. On the other hand, they are going to be facing the challenge that there has just now been this increasing host of rulings coming down from the U.S. Supreme Court in favor of spending taxpayer money on religious institutions. Since that 2002 ruling on the Cleveland voucher program, there have been further rulings by the Roberts Court, very supportive of or dismissing concerns about state church concerns about public taxpayer spending on religious schools and other institutions. And so that's sort of hanging out there, the precedents, the landscape of precedents has gotten much tougher for those who are trying to take on these voucher programs.
Your investigation, which appeared in ProPublica, and I'll mention it also, was published in The New Yorker, really paints a picture of Ohio as kind of a pioneer for vouchers across the nation. Is that how you see it? How was Ohio's voucher program a pioneer?
Oh, absolutely. It was really, throughout the 90s, it was really just Cleveland and Milwaukee were the real pioneers. And Milwaukee's voucher program started just prior to Cleveland's, but Cleveland's, in a sense, was even more important and aggressive because right from the start, it allowed for the voucher money to be spent in private religious schools. In Milwaukee, it was initially only secular schools that were able to use the vouchers, and so Cleveland was just very crucial in that regard. And then with the further expansion in the first decade of the century, again, Ohio was way out front in expanding its voucher programs to all these other cities in the state as well. The huge expansion that we saw in the last couple of years was really something that you suddenly saw exploding all around the country in lots of red and purple states, Florida, Arizona, a whole bunch of other states that now have universal vouchers. In that recent explosion, this is very important to point to underscore, was so closely tied to the extended pandemic school closures that you saw in so much of the country, which kept schools closed, in-person instruction in many cities for well over a year, including many cities in Ohio. And that just made it so much easier for voucher proponents to make their case, to say, look, you public schools left all these families high and dry, left kids stuck on Zoom school for more than a year. We have to give families other options. We have to give people a way to escape a situation that was just, really inadequate and intolerable for so many of them. And so that those extended school closures did great harm to the public schools in the sense that they really gave such an opening to the voucher proponents.
Well, I've been talking with ProPublica reporter Alec McGillis. His recent investigation also appeared in The New Yorker. Thanks so much for your time today, Alec. You've been great.
Thank you.
Up next, a new documentary explores the lesser-known story of Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky's abolitionist history. This is Cincinnati Edition.